Foundation, May 9th, 2011.
The question we're seeing, quote, has to do with the concept of the spiritual seeker at the beginning of the journey feels that it should get easier as it goes on. But as we go on more and more of the journey, it seems like it gets harder. And maybe it's the same principle of exercising the muscles. You have to exercise and lift heavier weights to get stronger muscles. And we're thinking perhaps that's the way it is metaphysically as well. We'd like you to speak to this concept to let us know if indeed it does get harder, and is that why, as we go further along the journey, it seems like maybe we're not really getting very far and haven't done so much. And does this principle, if it is true, hold more for wanderers? Is it more applicable to those who have come from elsewhere to be of service to those of planet Earth at this harness?
All right. Music.
We are those known to you as the principal of Guo. Greetings in the love and in the light of the one infinite creator in whose name we serve and in whose service we come to you this evening to speak with you concerning the spiritual path. It is our privilege to be called to your circle of seeking, and we are happy to share our humble thoughts with you. Firstly, however, we would ask a favor of you. We would ask that as you listen to these words, you use your discrimination and your discernment, taking hold of those ideas that resonate to you and leaving the rest behind. We greatly appreciate your doing this. For it gives us the freedom to share our thoughts without being concerned that we could interfere with your process or be a stumbling block before you. We thank you for this consideration. Well, is it called a spiritual path? For there is indeed a journey that begins when the seeker awakens from the dream of Earth to realize how very much deeper and wider and richer the creation is than he was taught by his culture. It is as though an alarm has gone off and he starts from his slumbers. It's a rude awakening sometimes. And once awakened, the seeker cannot go back to sleep. This is a great blessing. Yet there are times when it does not seem so. You have asked if a seeker's path becomes more difficult as the seeker becomes more spiritually mature. And you have likened the situation to the athlete who wishes to become stronger and therefore must add weight to his repetitions in order to see a continued strengthening of the muscles. My brother, we would respond by saying that it often seems as though the weights which you are lifting become heavier. Yet the analogy does not hold, at least not precisely. And to look at how this perceived increased difficulty works in a seeker's life, we need to fill in some background. Each of you planned before this incarnation what the shape and the direction of the incarnation would be. You and your guidance system gazed at your soul stream, at its balances of power, love, and wisdom. And you devised an incarnation with themes or incarnational lessons, if you will, using the metaphor of the school of earth being one which distills and refines souls. You chose relationships that would challenge you and support you. And looking at your incarnational themes, you devised situations which were rich in catalyst. Redundancy was built into this plan. You prepared yourself with far more relationships than you would need, just to be sure that if you kept backing away from a situation that involved an incarnational lesson, that you would never run out of replacement situations that would sound the same theme and bring forward the same opportunities to adjust the balances within your energy body of love, power, and wisdom. Consequently, when you awakened as a seeker, you began to be aware of the repetitive nature of these themes. You saw that again and again, the lesson that you had put before yourself in order to work on these balances that are so important to your soul stream would be given to you. At the beginning of the journey, you were working at that first layer of insight or understanding. Each entity has an unique incarnational plan. We can only generalize in talking about the shape and the texture of that lesson that seems to come up again and again in your life. Gradually, as these lessons cycle through the life of the seeker, the seeker begins to recognize the pattern. This is a great blessing. For when the pattern is recognized, there is a diminishing of fear and a realization that it is time to go forth as a warrior of light. To deal with the catalyst before you. And so there is no paralysis. There is no freezing into fear. There is the response of taking up the challenge and moving into response mode, gladly rejoicing at the opportunity to learn. And so the journey begins. There is that first dark night of the soul, and then there is that first dawn, where the dark night has ended, and you are washed clean, made new, ready to take hold of life with an appreciation felt only by those whose life has been threatened and who have come through safely amidst the storms of that dark night. Picture, if you will, your path not as straight ahead, but as a spiral. You can picture it as a spiral going upwards. And that will be accurate because each time you work with an incarnational lesson, you have walked further into the light. You have experience behind you now. You are far more able to be present with your catalyst and to approach it fearlessly. Yet also you may picture this journey as a spiral downward or inward. It is as if you were peeling layers of a many-layered thing like an onion, where all of your suffering and all of your triumph moves you one layer closer to the center of your incarnational lesson. The center remains a mystery. Yet as you move through these cycles of learning, there is an equal amount of increased insight and increased challenge. The increase in the challenge is due to the fact that you are moving ever closer to the center of your incarnational lesson. You have earned the right to deal more directly this time with that which will aid the soul stream, of which you within incarnation are a shell of personality. In comparison to the soul stream, then, you are as one literally on a journey, having packed your suitcases with your skills, your gifts, your relationships, and your challenges. You could not bring everything into this incarnation. You brought those parts of your soul stream which you needed in order to move through this dance, if you will, and do the work you came to do. So you see, it is not that the weights get heavier. It is not that you lift more. It is not linear. The increase in the feeling of challenge is that increase that occurs because you are moving closer to your goal. Thus, the colors are clearer. The energies are more intense and truer. You have earned authenticity. And in your authenticity, you grapple far more intimately with this question of balance. It is a great help to the seeker to come to terms with and appreciate the nature of the incarnational lesson or lessons with which you have supplied yourself. This familiarity with the theme of your incarnation, however, does not keep that work from being intense. The one known as Russell asked if it were possible that this school of souls would be a more intense thing for a wanderer. And to that question, we would respond by suggesting that a wanderer with an enhanced wealth of experience at his command before incarnation is likely to load his incarnational lesson plan with more lessons and more ways of serving than might a soul whose awareness is within third density, knowing more. You and your guidance have chosen to challenge the incarnational self with more work in terms of improving the balance. And also more opportunities to serve in terms of inner and outer work. Work within the self and work that is visible to the world around you. And therefore, we may say that indeed there is a strong tendency for wanderers to task themselves with more to learn and with more to share. Further, often wanderers retain a memory, whether it is specific or vague, of how energy runs in a more refined energy system. Consequently, there is a hunger for that ease of energy exchange, that comfort of living within the open heart at all times. It is impossible for an entity outside of incarnation in third density to grasp fully the impact of the veils dropping when the incarnation begins. There is often a fatal pride, which is unintentional and unconscious, and takes the shape of the feeling that, of course, I shall remember. How could I forget the way things really are? Then the veil drops. And here you are, no longer in the density from which you have come, but deeply within the veiled existence of third density illusory life. Mired, first of all, in a noisy, cranky chemical distillery, which you call your body. And then mired further by being relatively helpless, unable to express, unable to remember why things seem so different. And unable, with your physical senses, to see beyond the veil. In third density, it is not obvious to the naked eye that all things are one. It is not at all clear that your gawky, ungainly physical bodies are engaged in a beautiful, graceful dance with all that there is. And when the Lord of the dance calls you, it is easy to spend countless hours thinking, I cannot dance. I cannot hear the music. I. How fortunate it is that for every seeker there are moments of clarity when the dance is clearly perceived in all of its beauty and grace, and when you know beyond a shadow of a doubt that you are a dancer and that you are graceful and beautiful and perfect. And then the veil drops, and things seem effortful and harsh. And truly, for each of you, the lessons that you have chosen are not easy. This instrument, for example, gave herself the incarnational lesson of loving without expectation of return. It took this instrument many years and many relationships to notice that there was always someone in her life that required loving and that was not capable of loving in return. Has this made it easier for this instrument? In a way, it has. For this instrument recognizes the challenge when it appears, is able to don her armor of light, affix the ribbons to her lance, and set out to love without expectation of return. In another way, it becomes ever more subtle and ever more intense because the instrument is moving spiral-wise closer and closer to the center of that lesson. The end of that lesson is the learning to love the self. Then the spirals coalesce into a purity and a unity. And then the veil drops. And another spiral begins. This, we believe, is the happenstance, and that is the most accurate description of the seeming fact that as one becomes more experienced and has more history of seeking and asking, that one's lessons do not become easier, but indeed often seem harder. The increasing depth of difficulty is due to the increased amount of truth and authenticity that are wrapped into the experience of that incarnational lesson at this point in your cycles, which indeed shall continue while you breathe the air of planet Earth. And we say this not as a threat, but only as information that may be useful to you. You are not building a stairway to heaven. You are spiraling into the light of truth. As you go, you are learning to love yourself and others and the Creator. You are learning to accept love from yourself, from others, and from the Creator. You are learning to be. And this is the glory of being within the veil of forgetting upon planet Earth. For when you can move through the mire of that veil and into the light, through faith alone, you have used the harsh circumstances of third density to their very fullest. We rejoice with you for those moments when all comes clear, and we sympathize deeply for the suffering you undergo in the process of the journey. This instrument said earlier in the conversation that preceded this session of working, that he whom God loves, God tests. It is a quotation from this instrument's holy work of the Bible. And it is accurate. In your college, you have your quizzes and your tests. And sometimes you have surprise tests, what this instrument would call pop quizzes. That is very much the way dark nights of the soul come upon you, as a pop quiz. Unforeseen, unexpected. And yet not unplanned for in the deeper sense. It often helps if you can think of your life and how you live it as a game. You are here to love. The rules are simple. In each challenging piece of catalyst, there is that thread of truth. I am here to love. I am here to trust. I am here to gain the insight that all is well. Oh, you may think this is an excellent piece of catalyst. What a good game. If you can maintain that larger, wider point of view, it will be very helpful to you. And as always, no matter what the topic, we always seem to end up recommending time in the silence. Enter the tabernacle of your heart and close the door, if only for a few minutes each day, so that you may listen for that which is too deep for words shall empower you if you but ask, if you but listen. We thank the one known as Jim for asking this question, and would ask if there is a follow-up to this question before we open the session to other queries. Is there a follow-up, my brother? We are those of Ukua.
No further questions.
We thank you, my brother. And then we would ask if there are any other queries in the group at this time. And we are those at Bukul.
I have a question, Quell. I don't understand timelessness too well. How in fourth density and above there is no past, present, future. It's, if there's free will in third density, then I don't understand how from fourth or fifth or other densities you can see the future just as you see the present. I don't know if I've explained that enough, but that's my question.
Well, we are those at Bukuo, and believe we are aware of your query, my brother. We would respond by noting that in higher densities, there is still a certain amount of limitation of the viewpoint due to being incarnate. It is not that higher densities are aware of the future, but rather that beginning in fourth density, there is no veil, so that there is a complete transparency concerning your own thoughts, motivations, and so forth, and the thoughts and motivations of others as well. It does not make you a person without distortions. It makes you a person able to see the reason distortions occur. And consequently, it makes you a person able to have utter compassion upon your own distortions and those of others, and to be willing to collaborate, distorted though you are, distorted though others are, in the dance of manifestation and in the process of acquiring insight. When one is between incarnations, regardless of in which density this occurs, one is indeed able to view the full panoply of experience which has been gained by one's soul stream. However, it does not make one able to see or predict the future. It makes one able to be more wholly aware of all of the influences that have washed through the soul stream, leaving their blessings behind. There is a subtlety that is endless to the question of selfhood. And because of the fact that the Creator itself is a mystery, so are you, a spark of that Creator, wrapped in and bound by mystery. What some call enlightenment, and what others call becoming able to awaken one's magical personality, it's not a matter of knowing more, but rather it is a matter of accepting that little wet bit which he knows. Therefore, becoming able to be authentically and genuinely who he is. This is your search and this is your gift. To find yourself and to celebrate yourself. The point at which all things are known is that point at which all desires have been explored and fulfilled. So that there is no longer attachment to anything, be it personhood, achievements, or understanding, that shall keep you from placing your entire hope and desire and will towards returning completely to the one infinite Creator, gaining spiritual gravity and losing all memory of self, wrapped at last in infinite unity. Until that occurrence, many densities from your present position within this cycle of grades of school, shall we say, you shall have to do without knowledge of the future, my brother. And free will shall be scrupulously observed. May we answer you further, my brother? We are those up in cool.
Thank you. Thank you, cool.
We thank you, my brother. Is there another query at this time? We are those up in cool.
Yes, I do have another query, cool. I'm wondering if you could connect the dots some between our current conception of the scientific conception of the trajectory of the universe, which is the Big Bang theory, which posits a somewhat circular trajectory to the universe, and spiritual evolution, the time frame, the time frame, the timeline of spiritual evolution, which starts to take very long in sixth and seventh density. And a corollary notion, which is that at the point of the Big Bang, all comes into existence out of nothing. That seems And I can try to clarify if that's still pretty vague.
We are those of Ukuo, and my brother, we are not sure in that we have grasped the thrust of your query. We shall respond, and then you may repoint us, if you would. The Big Bang Theory, as you call it, does indeed posit a beginning from nothingness. The Big Bang Theory, as you call it, does indeed posit a beginning from nothingness. However, we would suggest that the theory lacks the awareness of the nature of the one infinite creator and its original thought or logos, which is unconditional love. That creator exists in a plenum that fills all that there is. Yet, because it is infinite, and because the infinity is intelligent, the nature of the creation seems to begin from nothing. Yet it is as if the Creator's heart beat once, and that is the entire creation from your Big Bang until the final black hole collects the final experiences and harvests the knowledge of who it is once again. Then the Creator's heart beats. It is as if between the beats of the heart within your breast, it was posited that there was nothingness, simply because it could not be seen that the heart was beating. There is never a nothingness. There is always a plenum, and that plenum is the one infinite creator, love. We would now ask for you to repoint your query given what we have shared. We are those at the cool.
Cool, that was great. Because my own thoughts are kind of unclear. See, I thought you did really well with what I could come up with. My further question is: Does the timeline for spiritual evolution, comes to us through the raw material, correspond with the scientific estimate of the of one cycle of the cosmic heartbeat, one cycle from Big Bang to final black hole of 15 to 20 billion years? Is that if you add up first density plus second density plus third density, the periods of those up through the seventh density, Is that about the 20 billion, or are there some other concepts that would need to be used to correlate the two?
Well, yeah, those at Wakuo and are aware of your query, my brother. The so-called timeline is accurate as far as it is able to go. But it will be remembered that first density begins in timelessness and seventh density ends in timelessness. Consequently, there is far more to that heartbeat than linear time. And there is no translation that would enable us or anyone with the power of words alone to do justice to the nature of that timelessness. It can only be grasped as part of the infinity in which a creation exists. May we answer you further, my brother? Well, we are those of Akul.
Well, thank you.
We thank you, my brother. Is there a final query at this time? We are those of Akul.
I have a question. Quo. For harvestability from the third density earth experience, it is my understanding that the balancing of my energy centers, of anyone's energy centers, especially the lower three, and then the opening of the heart chakra is important. For harvestability from this last lifetime, what portion or what part of importance does restitution pay or play with harvestability at that time? Thank you.
We are those at Okuo and ask that you repeat your query, my brother, for this instrument's somewhat deaf hearing did not pick up your question.
My question is that for harvestability, I understand that balancing energy centers is very important, as such as also opening the heart chakra. I was curious as to how important and what part does it play a restitution to others of karmic energy. How important is that, and is that necessary at all with balance achieved, or certain balances achieved?
We are those of Kuo. Believe that we have actually heard through this instrument's apparatus your query at this time. And we thank you, my brother. For harvestability, it is important simply to choose to act in a way which is loving, a way which expresses your desire to serve those about you, a desire indeed to serve the good within yourself as well as others. There are no strings to this statement. It is a simple statement. To polarize enough to graduate, it is necessary simply to set your intention to love and serve the Creator by loving and serving the best in all that you see, yourself, others, the world around you. If you can not only set your intention, but be persistent and persever as choices come before you of an ethical nature in choosing the loving way, the embracing way, the understanding and insightful way that sees that to give is to receive, and to console is to be consoled. as the one known as St. Francis said so well. You shall graduate. However, in the process of being a loving and compassionate person, you shall inevitably discover that there are those things for which you would wish to be forgiven. And so that loving heart of yours opens and says, please forgive me. Most importantly, in terms of karma, or rather, that loving heart opens toward the self. And you are able to forgive yourself. This stops the wheels of karma. It is often far easier to forgive others than to forgive the self. Therefore, as you discover within yourself those suspicions that you may have karma with another and that you wish to stop the wheel of karma, remember that in addition to forgiving the other, and in some cases in asking forgiveness of another, if that other is in relationship and is alive and can speak with you, it is crucial always to forgive yourself. In terms of karma, it is to be remembered that when the wheel stops, there is still the work to do of remembering that you have forgiven. For imperfect memory will attempt, as a habit, to bring up old and settled scores as if they had not been settled, as if they had not been forgiven. When this temptation occurs, invoke perfect memory. Recapture that moment when you did forgive and you were forgiven. And let that replace the anxiety of old memory. May we answer you further, my brother? We are those at Ukuo.
No, Kuo, beautifully spoken. I am grateful for your wise words.
Could I ask a further question about that?
We are those at Ukuo, and my brother, we will gladly speak to your query.
Kuo, could you talk more about invoking perfect memory?
We are those at Ukuo. And are aware of your query. As you are fully aware, in your day-to-day life, it is a rough and tumble thing. Some things are remembered, other things are not. Some things pass by you, and you see them with your optical apparatus. You hear them with your ears. But they do not enter your heart. They do not enter your mind. It is as if they did not happen. That's imperfect memory. Within you, however, my brother, as this instrument would put it, you have a librarian that remembers and files everything. Most especially, that librarian files safely away all of those moments of balance when distortion has been lessened and where your light has found a way to shine more transparently. It is easy to forget those crystalline moments. Sometimes you must ask the librarian to go into the stacks and dig that moment back up. May we answer you further, my brother? We are those of Kuo.
Well, yes, Kuo. Can you, wondering if you could provide some more metaphors for invoking that librarian?
We are those at Bukuo, and my brother, we are content to leave you with one. Ask the librarian. The stacks are there. Your memory is there. The work you have done is not forgotten. This instrument's energies are waning. And so we would, at this time, most reluctantly, we may say, take our leave of this instrument and this group. We thank each of you for the beauty of your auras, for the beauty of the sacred space that you have created by coming together to seek the truth. We thank you for asking us for our humble thoughts. It has been a pleasure to converse with you. We leave you as we found you in the love and in the light of the one infinite creator. We are known to you as the principle of Nkuo. Adonai. Adonai.